I'd like to welcome everyone to the Mesa City Council study session for Thursday, February 25th, 2010.
So excited to dig in.
First item on our agenda is to review the agenda for next Monday's City Council meeting, regular council meeting. Page 2. Well, first of all, we'd like to excuse Councilmember Summers, who's at another event this morning, and hopefully will show up a little bit later because he's gone for right now. Page 2.
Mr. Mayor, council members, yes. We did ask that items 4C and 4D be removed from the agenda. We've had some questions come up that we want to address before we bring them back to council.
Okay. Item 4C on page 2 and 4D on page 3, removed from the agenda. Okay. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Anything else on page 2, page 3? Page 4? And page 5. Short agenda. Okay, and that being all, we'll move ahead. They want to move ahead and talk about the budget. We're trying to skip item 2.
Oh, and, I'm sorry.
And it's not
well,
going
you know. Mayor, Council, before Mr. Odom, Mr. Raines start their presentation, let me just kind of set in context the discussion regarding, the new economy that we're in and how...
this new economy is getting awfully old.
Okay.
Can we change
the current
that?
Economy that, what are you, I'm trying to come up with something changing. But when we've looked at, as we look back with the city's finances and the changes in the economy, we've looked at it since, even the fiscal year 06-07 fiscal year and going forward for the last 3 years, we've been adjusting to this new economy as a city. We've saw it early on, and as we know, back in December of 09, we made some significant adjustments. I think we've done this in a way that has allowed us to make the adjustments to the economy. Certainly, we've done it in a variety of different ways through innovation, through consolidation of departments, through looking at new service delivery models. And I think we've been recognized for that, and the staff's done a great job of challenging themselves, challenging the departments to look at different ways to provide the services. And we're going to continue to do that. Today you will hear the presentation on the forecasted shortfall. But just to put things in context, we really, as I said, about 3 years ago, we began to see the significant drop-off in resources related to sales tax, specifically, and even construction permits. So over that period of time, there's been about, at least up to date, about over $90 million in reductions. 570 positions have been eliminated. And certainly this gives us time to evaluate how we do things. And I think we've been able to do a very good job during this period of time while continuing to provide a variety of different services for the community. And maybe in some ways even better than we were 3 years ago because we've challenged ourselves to look at new and innovative ways to do it. Today, we're going to continue to see, I don't think it'll be surprising anybody because we talked about this back in October when we had the Council Strategic Initiatives session, that we were continuing to see additional slippage both in the sales tax as well as in the construction activity. That will be reflected today. As we've kind of looked at our economic metrics and what we're looking forward out into the future, these have been pretty precipitous changes in the economy and in our resources in a very short period of time. As we look forward to what does that mean for the future and where are we looking to in the future, we really try to look beyond the next fiscal year, which would begin July 1 of 2010 all the way through June 30th of 2011, to try to understand where we think this is going. And really the best information that has been coming to us and really in different areas is, while it may have only taken us a few years to drop off this quickly, it's probably going to take us 4, 5 years, even before we ever get back to where we were maybe last year or 2 years ago. So it's going to be, it was a fast fall, and it's going to be a slow rise out. And so when we're looking at our budget and our programs and services, we're really going to have to look at, again, a sustainable change in how we do things and how we deliver services, not thinking this is only going to resolve itself by the end of next year or even the following year. It has to be something that we look at that's sustainable for a period of time for us to get back to where we've been even 2 or 3 years ago. So that's kind of how we're approaching this, and what you'll see today, I think, in the presentation will help support that. So with that, Chuck, do you want to go ahead and start?
Good morning, Mayor, Council. Kind of before we get into our local level, Chris recently attended a Arizona City County Managers Association meeting, and a Dr. Lee McFeeters from ASU gave his forecast. And kind of wanted to go over some of the slides. What was nice about it, since I'm out on a limb with the forecast, this one's out there on the same limb I'm on, so kind of correlates with what we've been talking about. If you go to slide 2, you can see from the impact. Now, it never correlates at our local level exactly, but we trend the same way between the state and the city of Mesa. And as you can see, each of those changes that are indicated there are changes from the year-over-year change. So you can see the bases that are related to all the retail sales has been totally readjusted in through the projection of 20% downward thrust. So you can see what our downward pressure is even on our local economy. If we also take it into personal income, this is almost a new historic, it's been unprecedented on a historic basis. Personal income for the first time has gone down at the state level, 1.5% for 8-9. That's never happened before that I've seen in the records. Now, the unfortunate thing about that, it's affecting us now on a basis of what's happening with disposable income and retail sales, but what happens in 8-9 will affect us in 2 years out, and we'll show you some numbers on a local level of how much we think that's going to be. Then we get into the situation, I think, that's going to cause us to have this long, slow rise coming back out of the economy. And it all deals with the job growth or the lack of job growth in Arizona. So you can see what the job changes have been in the last year, and still job loss expected into the next fiscal year. So still affects personal income and disposable income. And then the last slide I wanted to show you from the McFeeters presentation is you can see in 2007 we were at 2.7 million jobs. We've lost 300,000 through this year, and it will take us through 2013 before we get back to where we were in 2007 in this forecast. Now, as I said, that really correlates with what we were seeing in our econometric modeling. So this is just another correlator from what we've seen on the local level. Just then we'll get into our local information. Just kind of refresh you. We always present these slides to you to kind of refresh your memory on what we're talking about in our presentation. We're talking about the general fund, which is where we have our discretionary spending, so to speak, and how we break down the resources that are associated with that. So we have about $409 million in resources available. Now, just to point out, of that resource, we've got $58.4 million in fund balance for contingency. That is not for spending. That we don't have that budgeted to spend. It's there for emergency. So, but it's appropriated for that purpose.
Chuck, Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you, Mayor. So what do you define as an emergency? If what we haven't been through in the last 2 years isn't an emergency, what is?
Let me answer that, Mayor and Councilman Fenter. These are one-time dollars. So if you spend them, they don't come back. And so usually in the past, you know, first of all, let me back up. There is a council policy has laid out that we establish a fund balance for the general fund between 8 and 10%. And that document is what we provide to the rating agencies that they ask for every time we sell bonds. So the fund balance is kind of understood is if there is, for example, a natural disaster, a significant magnitude that we don't have the resources initially that we can direct those to help pay for that. It is to sit there in reserve as a rainy day fund. An economic downturn would not necessarily be considered. I don't think that kind of that's not per, because the if it were a 1 year or 1 year significant economic event that we thought, okay, it's going to hit us this one period of time, we lost a significant business or some kind of I don't know, something that impacted 1 year, that maybe certainly would be looked at, we could justify to the rating agencies why we dipped into that reserve. But the fact that we've looked at this as a ongoing process, and if you use this reserve, then next year you don't have it. So what do you do that year and the following year? So it becomes a
There's a little bit of confusion there. We keep a fund balance for two reasons, from what I heard in your explanation. The first one is our ability to create long-term capital projects through bonding and other things is determined by, in part, what rating agencies and other things say, and they require us to keep a reserve as a safety. Second thing is that just out of good financial policy, we keep a reserve to cover those kind of potential one-time one-time drops or things that we would have to dip into one-time monies for if there was a natural disaster. And our sales tax, let's say a major part of our sales tax base was completely wiped out, you know, but it's going to rebuild over the next year, then that would be something. Or like you said, some kind of event. But what I'm hearing you say, it's not meant to cover decreases in revenue that are caused by economic downturns that will last more than one period.
Correct. However, I will say this. We, every year, and I think we talked about this in October of the Council, every year at the end of the year, typically that we have savings from departments' budgets, you know, and that those dollars at the end of the year fall into the fund balance. And so we'll look at those, and then...
And when we say savings, at the end of the year, some departments may or may not spend what they've been budgeted.
Budgeted, correct. And so as a result, then the fund balance may, at the end of the year, instead of being between 8 and 10%, it may grow to 12, 14%. We will then look at using those for one-time expenditures in the following year, whether it's vehicles or something like that. So even though it shows 14% here, we'll budget, and we won't budget for it at 14%. We'll put those as a resource, and we'll look at it and get back to the 8 to 10%. So we try to manage still at that 8 to 10.
And I appreciate that definition. It's been a little unclear to me, and so I watch, and you know, I've watched some of the amazing things that have been accomplished by our financial staff, and it, hands down, they're wonderful. Now, is it to pay off debt at? You know, I've seen some of the contingency funds pay off debt for the old stadium. It made sense. You know, we went to that batting cages or whatever, and so I understand. I'm just trying to get a grip on what the hard line, what the rationale is, and then see how we apply it in the future. So that's where I'm coming from.
Oh, okay, that's fair. And those funds are now, we're talking about, and this is where, for municipal finance, we're only talking about the general fund today. We're not talking about the enterprise fund. So the enterprise fund is where that we had contingencies there, and we had reserves there that we could absorb those costs. That's how we've traditionally absorbed some of those capital contingencies that come up during the year.
The enterprise fund, I remember, we need to go back to the enterprise fund being the
user-based, rate-based
example.
Water.
Hohokam Park. Water. Gas. Electric.
Golf.
Golf.
No.
Those types of things.
Airport.
Airport. That's a better one.
Those types of things that are outside the scope of basic services such as police, fire, libraries, those kind of things.
Correct.
Which is an entirely separate, in reality, an entirely separate ledger, an entirely separate fund.
Yes.
And this does not cover those items. This only covers basic police fire, those types of things,
yeah.
Not those other activities.
Not here.
And so when we, you know, you bring up batting cages. Batting cages are a non, there's monies there that are restricted to those side, and that's where we have a contingency. We might draw them for a capital item or something like that. We couldn't transfer those monies over to cover other things because they're meant to stay within those activities. Those activities are meant to be self-supporting, and therefore they stay there.
Just like in the spring training area, we actually have a contribution from the CVB tax to help offset costs at the stadium. It's directly related to that activity.
Which, speaking of that, just so we're, because we're on that, which is why when we talk about spring training activities, for example, they stay over here, and it's, and our budget decisions aren't about how many police officers do we have versus that, because they're completely separate activities that are kept in separate ledgers, and they sort of stand on their own as far as funding and budgeting and those kind of things. And I know that's oversimplification, but is that accurate?
It's pretty close, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pretty close.
Well,
good.
There, you'll see.
That, I was worried there that I might be way far away.
I think that is the philosophy we've used, yes. I mean, there are times
pretty close.
When
okay.
Parks Recreation has, you know, some maintenance that has to go back and forth
oh, yeah,
on the same
yeah,
crews.
Yeah.
That's all I was clarifying.
Okay. Councilman Kavanaugh.
Yeah, and to that point, I think that Mr. Brady and his staff take a really wise and sensible approach to managing fund balance in the general fund, because for many communities, it's a very easy temptation to reduce that general fund balance for short-term expediency or political gain, and with always the hope that the economy is going to rebound much faster than you think it will. And even in Mesa in the late 80s, early 90s, our the council back at that time took a chance and did reduce fund balances for kind of ongoing expenses, and you know, had hoped that the cycle would move back up, and ultimately for them, certainly it did. But given the different economic time, the new economy that we have at this point, I think the approach that Mr. Brady and his staff are taking are really pretty wise, because again, it's just such an easy temptation to use that fund balance for ongoing operational costs, which simply shouldn't do. Thank you.
And just one other thing, you mentioned that by council policy, we have the 8 to 10%, and that's only halfway. We've issued debt that has certain
we've
promises.
Represented that as
well,
part of
we
that.
Basically have issued that debt promising that we will maintain certain balances,
right,
too.
Right,
so
right.
Not only is it a policy, but also it's a condition for we have to, because we agreed to do that when we issued that debt. And that's, right. You know, as a safety yeah. gap for.
But again, we'll see that this fund balance, the 14% is what we ended up as a resource, but we actually maintain it at the 8 to 10. So I don't want to suggest that we're trying to even build
up. So we do use the fund balance to soften the blow.
Yes. It buys us time some ways, you know, sometimes, and we try to use it for one-time expenditure. So we try to match it up to the appropriate use.
Okay.
Just one more comment. Any recommendation we make in this presentation will take that policy into effect. So you can be assured that that number that we present takes that target goal into effect.
The 8 to 10%.
Yes.
Okay.
Then we go into our expenditure categories in the general fund for that $408.6 million. Since we're a service-oriented government, about 57% of the total expenditures, less grants in the general fund, are related to personal service costs. That's the biggest driver of what we've got. Then we have still some items out of debt service being paid for with general fund resources represented there. So those things are still there.
And Mayor and Council, let me just mention on the capital side, that fairly number kind of sticks out there. This just happened to be a year where we picked up both the roads pool at the beginning of the fiscal year and the skyline pool at the end of the fiscal year. So I think that represents, was it about 10? $9 million.
Once again, those were restricted funds.
Restricted
were not
funds.
Discretionary funds, because they were quality of life that were
right. But
saved
that's
away.
What's being shown
right.
here.
So the decision was not, we'll build those pools instead of, those were restricted
right.
funds.
Right, it's
that
just
were
they happen
designated.
To reflect on
gotcha.
This schedule.
Councilmember Higgins.
Question about personal services.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about enterprise funds.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The people that work in those enterprise funds, they're in that other
correct.
Ledger.
It would be a separate schedule, yes.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, Councilman Finn.
Could you give us a quick definition, like other services, what examples those would be, commodities, and then obviously the...
A commodity is something tangible that you're buying for use for, it could be hose, rakes, those kind of things, you know, something that's tangible. Other services would be like professional services, utilities, you know, those kind of things that you're associated with your service delivery.
Now, if I'm reading this right, our debt service is about $35 million. Our
correct.
Secondary property tax rate is 14, which means we're still funding about $21 million out of basically our other revenue
that
sources.
Is correct.
Okay.
Now, if we go to the next and we take what you really have discretion over, if you take out the fund balance issue and you take out debt service, which you're obligated to pay, That puts a perspective on about $332 million in that discretionary, including the capital. So your public safety cost, we put into a perspective of what it is as a percentage of the budget against all the other programs. So public safety of those non-debt service fund balance issues is about 69% of the general fund.
How has that changed over the last five, 6 years, or has it changed?
It's very consistent.
It's consistent, yeah. Okay.
And for this purpose, public safety includes not only police and fire, but city court.
In the city court.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now let's go back to where we were in December. I used a term, and I've been reminded this several times, pessimistically cautious. Well, my caution has borne out to a certain extent. We were about estimating for 9-10, we were going to be downward pressure about $12.3 million. Well, what we're projecting now after we've gotten our December sales numbers and those types of things, this is through our January actual data, we're looking probably about 16.4 drop in revenue for this year. Mainly it's coming around for we're seeing some fall off on some of our fees for charges, things due to the economy start to fall off on people participating in discretionary activities. So that started to be reflected. We've seen a little fall off in fines and forfeitures from that point. We'll constantly monitor this for the rest of the year, and we'll also look at what that impact is on 10-11 related to these any changes. So we'll come back with any updates that we think would be significant during our discussions this spring.
And Chuck, so this is a snapshot based on actuals through the
January general ledger numbers. Now, just giving you a comparison of what we think is going to happen further in 10-11 compared to 9-10. Good news is it looks like we're starting to see what we've defined as trying to be the bottom. We're looking at about another 1.2% fall off in overall revenues in these categories. That's about $3.2 million more. So we don't see the bottom quite yet, but we're seeing a little bit of firming. So we'll also keep, like I said, we'll keep monitoring, coming back with any significant changes we're seeing. Probably the thing to point out, though, so if you look at urban revenue sharing down there, in 10-11, you can see we're going to drop off another $14.2 million from 2 years ago.
And that's not a projection, that's an actual.
That's an actual, because that's 2 years ago.
Because that lags 2 years.
Right,
that's correct.
They know what it is. And then, so, Mayor and Council, when you look at this, what we're trying to forecast is this is for the period beginning July 1st, 2010 through June 30th, 2011. Okay, so it's that far out that we're looking at. So what we're, and this is a comparison to this year, which is historically at its
low
point for all these revenue sources. So while you see some increases here, the idea is we believe we'll see some recovery, not necessarily a significant recovery, but better than even this past year, that we'll start seeing that after July, after the summer, into the next calendar year is where we expect to start seeing some improvement, better than this historically low year. So these numbers, sometimes people get excited about these high percentages, but it's just coming off a very low point. Again, remembering that very slow rise coming out of the economic abyss that we're in right now. So.
Right. To tag on to that, probably the number that I'd want to put some perspective on would be the city sales tax. Now, what we're seeing is, if you've looked at your monthly reports that are coming on the categorical, you can see retail sales are starting to firm up somewhat. Where we're getting clobbered currently in the categorical expenses or revenues is on construction. So you're compared to a year ago, you know, those are those percentages. You're seeing that slowdown. I think we're going to have a cleansing of most of those comparisons by the end of this fiscal year. And as Chris says, as time goes on, you're just coming off of a historic low comparison, and that's not a very large change. It won't get us back to where we were this year. So just to put it in perspective. So to kind of get to where we are and what we need to discuss this spring is what we're looking for, 10-11, a general fund budget shortfall. With the decrease in 9-10 and the additional decrease in 10-11 and maintaining those fund balances out there in that 2 to 3 year fiscal year period, we're looking at about $19.6 million shortfall that we're going to have.
Hey, Chuck, when we say 10-11, that's basically for the next 17 months.
Correct.
Yeah. Or 16 months, well, actually.
Right. 16
so
months.
June through June 30th,
so this is 10-11. This isn't the fiscal year 10-11. No. This is the remainder of fiscal year 9-10 and all of fiscal 10-11.
That's what's
from now through July, June 30th, 2011.
Correct, sir.
Okay.
Now, I do want to point out one thing. We've had a lot of discussion on Fire Station 220, and I have not received direction on how to staff or fund or pay for the O&M related to that, so I want to just make sure.
That's not included in this number, so if we need to address it, it'll have to be out in addition to this.
Oh, okay.
About $1 million a year.
$1.6 million.
$1.6 million, yeah.
$1.6 million.
That first year operation cost ongoing is just about $1.6 million.
So this includes this assumes ongoing existing operation
with the 290, with the current.
You say 220, but any other additions?
Any other fire station?
Any other
addition?
I mean, we focus in on that because that's the one that
right.
hangs out there.
Right.
But anything added that might be added is not included in this.
We don't want to presume that ahead of council's direction. So I mean, we know that's important, but how we were going to fund it, we don't want to presume that. Okay.
All right.
And just to go through some of the pressures that kind of were taken into account expenditure-wise into this and the urban revenue sharing, I just wanted to point out on slide 12, in 11-12, you can see from where we were in 10-11, we still have another hit of about $5.4 million. And obviously, I would expect, and I don't have those numbers in front of me, one more year of that type of urban revenue sharing offset to any gains in our other revenue categories. So just to show you those pressures. Now on expenditures, one of the changes that we have had since the December forecast, the public safety retirement for 10-11, we had a 5% increase in that. They've come back out now and officially said they're not going to raise their rates for this year. So I've taken that back out of this forecast. I'm projecting something for 11-12 of 5.1%. The other items that we presented in December are staying the same. Probably one of the things that we need to probably come back to you on is the Employee Benefit Trust. We'll need to have a discussion on that this spring. There's been a utilization increase, so we want to talk about those pressures that are occurring and give you a presentation on what's happening in the Employee Benefit Trust.
Councilmember Kavanaugh has a question.
Thank you. This is helpful. It seems that the general fund pressures primarily are coming from external forces over which the city has no control. And I think that's significant for us and the public to understand, because I think the staff has done a very good job in terms of managing the resources we can control, and that we have a fair degree of predictability on in terms of revenues. But clearly, the shortfall that we're seeing is coming from outside forces that we have little control over. The employee benefits issue obviously is one of those areas where we have an opportunity for discussion, but that it really seems clear that it's external forces that are primarily driving the issue for this next budget year.
That's a good characterization.
And Mayor and Councilmember Kavanaugh, to add to that, and we've said it before, is the numbers you see here are really the balancing of our budget and our activities here. We have not tried to predict or anticipate any adjustments or impacts that may come at us from the state legislature, which would be in addition. This is to balance our own budget internally, as we've always done.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Councilman
Just back on page 7, under the general fund expenditure, on the debt service, I know there was a time we were in debt valley, and then we were coming to debt mountain, and I know some restructuring was done. Is that what do we anticipate the escalation under that?
Well,
go ahead.
Are we talking the pre-2008 authorization
or
total?
We're on the plateau. We're on the plateau. We'll be on, or the mesa, as someone may say.
Yeah.
And,
ooh.
That's good. This came to me, sorry. we'll maintain at that 20-plus schedule for another, what are we at, another 5-6 years?
We have another 3 years under that. And so what you see us is on that property tax situation, leveling that out and maintaining that.
And then it'll start coming off.
Okay. And we'll have a full, as we move through this spring, we'll have a full discussion of those statuses as we also move toward our normal spring bond sale in April.
Mm-hmm. Just to kind of go back to slide 12 and one of the other things, the mass transit issue is talking about those outside forces. Their economy at that regional level is affecting us at the local level. Most of these costs are being the push down related to their drop in revenue. We're on the hook for the operating cost. So some of this is reflecting that. So,
question, the Dial-A-Ride, you don't have anything for 11-12.
Because it's that $400,000, we have now figured it into an ongoing. I just didn't want to say I've escalated another.
So this is a year over year, yes, is what you're saying.
And,
so.
And each of these that I'm going to have an additional in 11. Let's go to the fixed route, $75,000, but I'm going to add another 1.6 the year after.
Okay.
And that's due to the life cycle takeover of the bus routes. We had had those in the forecast originally. The schedule was they were going to take them over on a regional basis. They have delayed that. So
okay.
We're constantly working with the RPTA and discussing what their forecast, and I think that's helped a lot this year on trying to project where they're going to be in a fiscal year. I think those discussions have been fruitful. Just the items that we're taking under consideration for addressing the shortfall, we've already talked about what that shortfall represents. We're looking at that 2 to 3 year fiscal year period, trying to make sure that we maintain that fund balance and balance out the pressures of the costs that we're seeing. We've asked departments to provide a 10% planning scenario. That doesn't mean that that's what we're going to take from each department.
As a matter of fact, just so we can be clear, as I do my math over the next 14 months, what your projections show is really less than a 5% shortfall if you look at the budget. So, I mean, the 10% is a cushion.
It's options.
It's options. It's being able to trade. One might be 1%. One might be 8%.
Right.
And I know it's not. It's easy and nice to say, "Oh my gosh, City of Mesa, all departments required to cut 10%." As I'm understanding it, that is absolutely not the case and doesn't fit with your numbers.
That's correct.
Because 10% is not what we.
And it never has. Yeah. It's just. Yeah. It's been a planning. But one thing we do, and you alluded to it briefly. In December, not all departments, it's not across the board equally to all departments either. At some point, as we meet with council, those percentages and amounts will also adjust.
Well, and I think, once again, let's get back to what you talked about in the beginning, Mr. Brady, and that is that last year we asked departments for plans that created significant cuts also. The idea being is that to push the departments to have to think in ways that go beyond just the minimum number that we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
to create new service models, to create things that are approaches that are different than what they might do just by cutting one or two positions. And I think that bore fruits that we're benefiting from. So I appreciate the fact that you're asking staff to push even more than what we might project. I know as I look around and see how other government entities are, they do the opposite. They forecast a 5% decrease, and they dink around with 1 or 2%. So I appreciate the fact that we've taken a very conservative approach. Now, the problem is that some people grab that and create a story where there's not a story. And, you know, we can't control that. But I think, at least I understand, I think we understand that we're trying to continue to push our department heads and staff to really get creative. Because it's hard now. I understand that it's hard to create a 10% contingency plan because we've already cut significantly. You know, we really are down to the bone. We know that. So I appreciate the fact this is not an easy process. I also appreciate the fact that we may or may not and hopefully never get to that 10% in reality. But at least we'll be in a position that if we ever have to go through what we've gone through this year where, like, even your most conservative proved to not be accurate simply because the economy went places that no one ever imagined, we'll be ready for it. We'll be prepared for it. I will say that one thing that I am really proud that our staff has done and that this council has done is that, you know, with all these decreases, this city has not been scrambling and been in panic mode during the last fiscal year. And that's not because we didn't make some very, very difficult decisions and we didn't do things that were incredibly difficult, such as, you know, eliminate positions and people lost their jobs. And that's not never easy to do. But we weren't panicked, and I see other entities that are playing catch-up, and that's never fun to play catch-up. So I appreciate the fact that you're trying to be out ahead of what we anticipate. So I applaud you for shooting above the 10%, which is above where we think we really might be.
Thank you. And that third bullet point kind of just addresses that. I think this is something all departments are doing. They're taking that critical analysis. We're talking about it in this budget process, but on a daily basis, they're always looking at their operations from a critical basis, trying to save us money. We're going to evaluate any methods for resolving the increased costs of employee pensions, wages, and medical benefits. We'll have those discussions that we've already talked about. We'll look at all the operational considerations, making critical sure that even as we're going now, we can save as much as we can in this fiscal year, which helps bump that fund balance, which helps us get us down the road a little further.
Just a quick question along that statement line. Do you feel like that capital purchases such as vehicles or ongoing maintenance on, do you see that as part of that last statement you said? Are you challenging that? And maybe, you know, because it's sometimes hard to see, hey, we've a huge purchase of vehicles and we're talking about laying folks off, you know.
I think I'd put it in this perspective. Back, you know, we've been in this mode since 2001. The approach was taken in the more short term at that time where we started stripping out maintenance issues. There's a certain amount of maintenance that has to occur. You have to have the tools to deliver your services. So we look at that from a critical analysis. So we only bring forward what we think is critical to maintain those tools to deliver safe services and make sure everything's done in a safe manner. So that's what we'll bring forward. We are always looking at those from that
But we standpoint. Do. We have an analysis that Fleet does that looks at all our fleet. And as it ages out and they track the maintenance record of each piece of equipment out there, rolling stock, and they understand and are very sensitive to the idea of making sure that the idea of how long can we keep that vehicle before it becomes more expensive to keep and maintain than it would be to purchase another one. The other thing we've done that's been very effective, and I think we're going to see some immediate savings that we're going to maybe able to realize even in this year, is we're doing even as we track the usage of these vehicles, we're finding vehicles that are low mileage vehicles,
underutilized
vehicles, and we're being able to shift them around into the system so we're not having to buy new vehicles. So we believe there will be some savings in there, but we're still going through that analysis to shrink that down. Maintenance facilities always a difficult one because as you stop maintaining your facilities, at some point you pay the price down the road. But we are looking at different ways to approach that and schedules. We've cut back on our private janitorial services significantly over the last couple of years. But those are all part of the evaluation that goes on.
Well, and I think – oh, go ahead.
No, it's based on what Councilmember Fincher just said, do we look at – like when we have grant-funded vehicles, for instance, which we have, do we look at the ongoing costs and include them in that kind of analysis like Councilmember Fincher asked? You know what I mean? I mean, we see these things fully funded by, you know, RICO grants or grant.
Vehicles we
but
purchase.
We're still buying them, so do we look at the ongoing costs of getting that grant-funded vehicle for the long-term budget?
Well, the way that model works, I take a grant-funded vehicle in and I'm saying I'm not replacing it unless another grant comes forward or the city manager approves the ongoing approval. So because we're not growing the fleet through one-time bumps to our budget.
But as far as the maintenance of that grant-funded position, we obviously have to look at that cost.
But I think Councilmember Higgins raises a good point. I mean, it's great to have grant funds, and I think the policy we've taken, a lot of it's like the COPS grant. We don't take one-time money that creates long-term burdens right. That we haven't anticipated, that we haven't factored in there. Sometimes it's better to say no than it is to take that gift
right.
That never seems to quit giving. And I think we've done a pretty good job of, for example, not increasing the fleet by 10 vehicles just because they're grant.
Right.
Because when we don't have the money to maintain
right.
it.
Right. And while that's key, I'll tell you the more sensitive issue is the personnel.
Right. Well, any program. And I think we've been very clear that any program that creates long-term burdens or additional burdens
right.
on the city, we're going to take a very close, and
right.
basically we start out with no and say, okay, get us to yes somehow.
Yeah.
So
great. Right.
I just like to say one thing also as it relates to the maintenance. You know, this brings home the point that this is not a one-year or one-time snapshot operation we're involved in. You know, the city, hopefully, and I think we have to plan, it's going to be around here for generations. And therefore, we have to make decisions not only taking into account the current situation, but I hope we never realize that these decisions are also not only 1 and 2 year decisions, but they're 10 and 20 year decisions. And sometimes, you know, that makes it hard for people to understand. Well, why did you do this year? We may actually spend money that if you just took a snapshot, like maintenance, for example,
mm-hmm.
if you took a snapshot, you'd say, why would you spend money on maintenance that year on those buildings? Well, if that's all you were looking at, that might be a valid point. But in reality, we're looking at that building as a 20 or 30 or 40-year expenditure or commitment, and therefore it's wise to spend the money this year, recognize that it's not a snapshot, it's a video that goes long-term, because if we don't spend the money this year, we're creating a greater burden for the taxpayers, and a greater cost for the taxpayers in years 2, 3, 5, 10, whatever it might be. So I appreciate the fact that we haven't lost sight of the fact that this is an ongoing, long-term endeavor that we're involved in.
Yes. Why don't we go to the ballot?
Okay. One other issue that we're going to have to bring up this spring to discuss for ballot in the fall is it'll be late spring we'd start talking about this, but we have an expenditure limitation alternative election that we're going to need to address. Currently, the city is under a home rule.
Expenditure limitation alternative?
Yes. The state puts an expenditure limitation on a city based on
this
79.
This is home rule?
Yes.
Home rule.
Okay. Home rule. But okay. 79.
Can you just call it home rule?
Yeah, I can. I just didn't want to assume that's where you want to go. There's multiple home rule there's multiple alternatives. But home rule, City Mesa is approved for home rule.
I mean, it's funny because as I've heard, I've been in other cities, and I have heard home rule defined in three or four different ways. And they've used home rule, override, alternative.
They're very complicated.
It's basically home rule, right?
No, they're actually separate.
They're separate.
They're separate options.
You have different options to pursue.
Okay, but I mean, I've heard some people, and I ask them, I said, was this, he goes, yeah, basically this is home rule. We just call it something different here. We don't use the home rule. And I know that other cities have, overrides and that.
Let's call it home rule.
Okay,
right
we're calling
now.
Home rule.
We use home rule. That's what we've been approved for.
Okay, thank you.
Expenditure limitation is what the legislature gave.
Yeah, I understand that. I just want to make sure that in our lingo, we're using the same terminology. Make sure that. I'm confused now because, I went to these other cities and I said, explain to me what you're doing. And one was a specific override.
Yes.
Okay. But it was amazing. Two or three of them said, no, we don't call it home rule here. We call it either this or something else. Because that's what they've said in the past. They came up with their own terminology and they just carried it forward. And now they're on their 10th election. And I don't know what they call it, but it's not home rule and it's not this. So that's why
we'll come back with
that's the only reason I
define all those
we'll
for you.
So let's just at least be consistent.
Right.
If it's home rule, let's use home rule.
All I guess I wanted to accomplish today is we have to have a discussion this late spring talking
about this. And I sort of messed that up, right, by going off on a tangent. Okay, thank you.
But what messed us up on this is we've been approved from March 2008 for a four-year home rule option. Well, that will expire before we can have another election if we let this 2010 election go by before we would have it in place.
Because that would expire
in March.
In March or June.
June
of 2012, yes. And we don't have an election until August or November of 2000, or September, November of 2012.
Correct.
So we would once again be faced with that four-month, five-month gap where we would have no authorization.
It'd actually be a one-year
gap. 1 year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it would, actually 6 months, because it would go to the end of the year. Whenever it would kick in, forget it. It would be a gap. It would be bad.
It would be bad.
We're getting simple here. Home rule, bad. Okay, I got
home
it.
Good. Home rule, good.
Home rule, good.
Expiration,
gap.
Bad.
Gap, whether it's 1 week or 1 year, bad. Thank you.
Well,
I'm glad we're getting extra technical here. Thank you for finally bringing it down to my level that I can understand.
And really, if we didn't have a special election and kept it on that fall, we'd have a two-year situation. So
really bad.
Really bad.
So we have bad and really bad. Okay.
So we're proposing to come back this fall with a home rule option, if that's the way you so choose to go forward, to make sure that we don't get to the situation where we expire and have to cut our budget from an artificial means. What the home rule option allows you to do is spend the revenues that you raise at the local level. That's all it does. Still requires balanced budget. Doesn't give you anything.
Well, it allows
extra.
You to determine, with to decide to spend.
Right. Okay. Without home rule, you would be
limited
to expenditures regardless of what the revenues were that came
That's
to
right.
the city.
And regardless of what we decided, this would not be a council or Mesa decision.
Correct.
It's already set for us, and we would have no discretion as to what that goes.
That is correct.
Hence, home rule. See, I can make that connection.
So we'll bring that presentation to you. Slide 17, we'll go over some of all through March and April, we'll have all these budget discussions probably on a very regular basis at study sessions. About May 13th, we'll have that home rule discussion. We'll have a preliminary budget submitted to you on May 13th. That's what we're targeting. May 17th, notice of intent to adopt any utility rates, and we're evaluating those. We'll come back with those presentations through the audit and finance and to you directly here in the next month or two. June 21st, public hearings. You'll adopt the budget. The council will also adopt the utility rates June 21st. And on July 8th, we'll have the secondary property tax levy adoption. So those are the significant landmark dates.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay.
Now, one other thing we're going to tag on, Pam, if she's going to be handing out to you, we have the Charter CIP book, and why I call it the Charter CIP book and the Mesa City Charter, we're required to produce a CIP presentation.
Chuck?
Yes, sir.
For the home audience, CIP being?
Construction Improvement Program, I'm sorry.
Capital Improvement.
I
went to my
quiz, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to trip you up, I just wanted to explain.
It's CIP, I'm sorry, that is an acronym we speak in so frequently here.
So, Mayor and Council, this, as required by the Charter, we have to have this out by March. These projects are very consistent with the program the Council approved in the 2008.
Correct.
Bond program.
And prior.
And, then, and some prior. So these are approved projects that have been authorized through bonds, and it just kind of gives you a status of where those projects that are continuing through the out years. We've not included any projects that we haven't identified funding or that we would be presenting to the Council for future bond programs or activities. This is just kind of a status of where we are today with the projects that have been approved.
And the one other thing, you will see besides bond projects, at any financially restricted things that we have in the model that's general fund supported, you know, we've talked about the pools, you'll see those kind of funding items in there too.
Okay, so you say that like with the pools, even though we may not have actually approved it, because funding is there and is restricted, it might be on here?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's a planned project.
Planned project.
Yeah, okay. It's part of the capital project. So, and it goes out to fiscal year 14-15. And what this helps us too, why this is also important for us, is if we have a capital project that's going to, for example, a fire station. The construction of a fire station is both a capital improvement project, and so we have to come up with $110 to build the facility, but then it also creates the ongoing operating costs, and you'll notice that that is included. That's part of this analysis that helps us forecasting out into the future budgets the impact of some of these capital projects that may generate an operating expense.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on the streets program. SIP.
What's that?
Capital improvement projects.
Oh, no. You all have to. We don't. We have to call. We'll talk about it in the spring. You call it. It's for the November or the August. November. I think it's the November election. Yeah, I'll check. Let me check. That's
good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Dan Clevenger, Transportation Director. With me is Alan Sanderson, Deputy Director and Traffic Engineer. We'll be continuing the theme of money and funding. We'll talk today about transportation capital improvement projects. But I feel like I have some good news today, so.
Dan, would just quickly just remind the Council, this is a follow-up from the study session we had two weeks ago over at the police station, where we talked about an update on the Fiesta District, and we talked about coming back with an update on the streets transportation capital improvement program. Yeah. So that's what this is.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Chris. A few months ago, we started developing a list of capital projects in preparation for a potential November 2010 bond election. Recently, we stepped back to kind of look and see where we're at with the 2008 bond election, and we realized there's considerable savings. So we've tried to look at maybe what we can do with those. The savings are a result of competitive market, the declining property values when we have to acquire right-of-way for our projects. Materials are less expensive, and we're just really getting some really good bids right now. Per the engineering department, this fiscal year alone, our bids have come in about 27% under budget and 22% under the engineer's estimate. What we're doing today is we're going to highlight some potential projects that maybe we could use these savings to fund. And what that does is essentially extend the 2008 bond election or the bond package by up to two additional years. Presentation today is going to cover a little background on the transportation department. Street project history, including the RTP or Regional Transportation Plan, capital funding, and then we'll talk a little bit about some specific projects. Three of Council's strategic initiatives relate closely to transportation, economic development, quality of life, and financial stability. In economic development, there's a couple of notable elements there, light rail and Fiesta District within quality of life. implementation of the 2008 bond projects and some of our green initiatives like pavement recycling and LED streetlights. Finally, the financial stability initiative talks about a little bit about the financing the future effort, which led to our dedicated transportation sales tax, and then consideration for a future bond authorization. Mesa's transportation system is a network of streets, tracks, sidewalks, and paths. Our mission statement highlights the proper planning, designing, operations, and maintenance required to keep the system safe and efficient. Just a few numbers here to give a scale to our street system. Our busiest intersections carry about 78,000 vehicles a day through the intersection. That's over 28 million vehicles per year in a single intersection. On a citywide basis, over 11 million miles are traveled daily within Mesa. On the safety aspect, we monitor and track the statistics for 7,000 to 8,000 vehicle crashes per year for us to help prioritize where our projects should be. In addition to that, we maintain about 37,000 streetlights and almost 400 traffic signals. Regarding street maintenance, we have over 32 million square miles of asphalt we maintain. It's equivalent to over 4,500 lane miles, and to give you a little sense, that's basically a two-lane road from Mesa to New York City is what we maintain. If you look at our cycle here for our street system, our asphalt, our pavement, is really our biggest and most costly asset. We need to take care of that. You heard in the previous presentation a little bit about the need for maintenance. If you don't maintain your assets, it can be very expensive down the road. So it's a real balance. This slide shows the typical treatment cycle to achieve our maximum life. And the life of pavements typically 28 to 30 years. So in order to achieve that, we have treatments every 1 to 3 years. About halfway through that 30-year period, we typically will do a mill and overlay to get us to our ultimate life. And then finally, when the pavement's no longer able to be rehabilitated, we need to remove and replace it or reconstruct it. Our current transportation plan was adopted by council in 2002. It's now about 8 years old. The planning process identified our street needs for build out in the 2025 year timeframe. And the proposed improvements to be included were in the regional transportation plan. This effort was coordinated with three other plans. It was a general plan, and these are all done at the same time, Parks and Rec plan and Economic Development plan. In addition to those, there's been several sub-plans underway since, primarily in Southeast Mesa, in the Gateway area and the airport. Due to the age of the transportation plan, it's been about 8 years, we need to start thinking in the next couple of years about an update. Really, there's been kind of a change in philosophy and priorities, and I want to make sure that we're in alignment with what council wants to do, frankly. Regarding the regional transportation plan, it's funded by a half-cent countywide sales tax that was passed in 2004. We didn't get all of our projects in from our Mesa transportation plan. We had, I believe it's something on the order of 77 projects, but we did get 55 in the plan that were funded. Those projects are scheduled for a cash flow exercise over a 20-year period. And they were built, again, on the build-out for Mesa. Just remind council, there's a 30% match, a local match on these. The region pays for 70%, up to 70%, I should say. And Mesa's required to fund the 30% local match. There's two primary funding sources for the streets program in Mesa. It's a local 0.3% sales tax that was passed in 2006. And secondly is the HERF funds, Highway User Revenue. However, those funds are dedicated primarily to operations and maintenance. Leaves us short for capital. We really don't have much in the way of funding for capital projects outside of our bond package.
Yeah. Councilmember Higgins.
Is there that expired, that 2006? Is there an expiration date on that 0.3%? No, he's shaking his head. Okay. All right, thanks. I didn't know that.
When we talk about the regional transportation plan projects, Typically, they add capacity in the form of through lanes. You might go from two through lanes to three in one direction, dual left turn lanes, right turn lanes, and bus pullouts, and then there's some other elements there as well. It's highlighting briefly the bond election that was passed in November 2008. Total funding for streets projects was $110.9 million. That involved about 13 projects or categories of projects, which I'll run through in the upcoming slides. First category was the regional transportation plan projects. There were eight of those. You see the first one on the list, we're happy to announce, was completed. Original cost estimates you see on this sheet are in the second column. The third column showing the regional share, or the reimbursement we get. Finally, the last column shows the net funding requirement. What we do is leverage, again, our 30% local match to get these monies. If you look in that column where it says regional share, if it's a regional share shown there, those projects are all, or that reimbursement's eligible immediately after completion of these projects. If there's not one, it means it's in an out year. In the case of the four blanks there, those reimbursements are in the year 2019 through 2022. So we won't see our reimbursements until that time. Second category of projects in the November 2008 bond package were what I call other street improvements. You're familiar with the ASU Polytechnic Ring Road, the work going on by down there. In addition to that, there was arterial road construction. A large portion of that money, up to $10 million, was available for our commitments to DMB and things in Southeast Mesa for the development in that area. The remainder was done with for reconstruction, rebuilding some of our streets where we have failing pavement. Last item was addressing a significant drainage issue on Broadway between Sossaman and Hawes. Just a quick item on this one. This $4 million was, it says street construction, intersection improvements, street lights. You know that better as city share. Basically, when a property is developed along an arterial street, the developer is required to pay for it. It's 24 feet of pavement, curb gutter, sidewalk, a portion of the street lights. The city pays the remainder of that, which is really the regional portion of the street. And that commitment on the city's behalf can really vary widely. Recently, there hasn't been a lot of development, so we're not expending this $4 million very quickly. Touching quickly on the ITS element, there's $10 million for ITS and our traffic signal system. We've made quite a bit of progress on that. We've been able to convert a lot of our traffic signals from our old Sonex system, which is not supported any longer, to ICONS, and we think we'll finish that within 12 to 18 months. Here's the big slide, I guess. You look at the total authorization, $110.9 million. In completing all those projects I mentioned, we expect the cost of those projects to be on the order of $76 million. That leaves available funds at $34.8 million. So in the upcoming slides, I'd like to just kind of touch on what we might do with those. I've gotten, you know, some feedback, and just like to show you what we've kind of come up with, and hopefully open for just some discussion. Before I go on, though, I want to...
Dan, Councilmember Richens.
I don't know if it'd be inappropriate to applaud at this point.
That's my good news.
We can't blow past that so quickly. That's that headline that I asked Gary for. I got one for the fire stations, and I'm hoping to get one for transportation that actually came in under budget, on time and under budget. That's that by a lot.
That's so big money.
I just big congratulations to you guys for doing such a great job with that. And, of course, you know, having
engineering as well,
a good economy in that. Helps, yeah. But certainly good. Yeah, out the door and good management.
Councilmember, is taking advantage of this favorable construction environment and working very, very hard to get those projects out the door to take advantage of these low prices. So.
After that last budget presentation, I didn't want to blow past that too fast.
No,
can we dwell just for a brief moment? Thank you.
Frankly, that's a little...
What you might want to do next time is that on that slide, when it has available funds, don't put brackets around the $34 million. Yeah. We've been seeing way too many brackets.
We need to stay out of the brackets.
We like positive. Yeah, yeah.
This is, yes, you're correct, Mayor. This is a positive number.
Yeah,
yes.
The 110 shouldn't
have
brackets.
Ignore the brackets.
Yeah. The 110 shouldn't have bracket, neither should 34, just the 76.
I'm not an accountant, but I agree.
Good catch.
That's one of the few pieces of good news we have in this economy is we're getting some great deals, and people are out working on these projects, and we're providing a service to our residents. Where was I? Oh, I wanted to mention this Dobson University project. It was originally identified to be what someone might call a widening project. It was going to add eastbound and westbound through lanes. You see the total cost there was going to be $6.5 million. There's considerable property impacts when we did the alignment study, and we didn't feel like we were getting a lot of bang for our buck. In addition, if you look at the property impacts along the south side of the street, east of Dobson, we're getting into a couple of businesses and up to 7 residential properties. So our proposal is to, instead of widening the street, is to reconstruct the failing pavement there. It's due. What we'd like to do is rebuild that and add the bus pullouts, and we can do that for about $2.8 million. So that 3.7 on the bottom, that net savings, is really part of the 34.8 I mentioned previously.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, and I really appreciate Dan's recommendations in this regard, because as he notes, when they did the analysis, it could have some significant takings impact on some residences and businesses in my district, and that's obviously, I'm glad they identified that early on, and I think there's an opportunity for significant savings here by reconstructing the intersection. It is a major intersection in the community. Adding the bus pullouts, I think, will help improve the traffic flow to a goal of what we need. The other issue that I'm hoping that we're able to do is this is a very heavily used transit route, and I'm hoping that as part of the new project or revised project for this, we can look to doing an enhanced bus shelters for this particular section, whether they're public art shelters or just larger shelters. We have a lot of people using transit along University. It's a major entry to our city, either from north to south and from the west. So I really appreciate the staff's sensitivity to residents and businesses in that location, but at the same time pursuing the goal for improved driving along University and Dobson and through the intersection. Thank you, Mayor.
Part of the reason for the capacity improvements originally planned was Riverview, Wave Yard, Light Rail, and the future Dobson Bridge over the Salt River. Some of those haven't materialized yet, so operation-wise, this intersection's running pretty well. We're not having a crash problem, so we just thought this would be wise to move forward in this manner.
Well, it also, I mean, not that there's a direct correlation, but to reiterate, I was just meeting with Mayor Dunnott and Chandler, and they were talking about how they've sort of followed our model, which is we used to widen streets and think that was the answer. Now we've realized that if we take care of intersections, we can be much more effective in improving safety and traffic flow, and widening streets really doesn't get you there, and it does create disruptions that can be avoided if you just take care of intersections. So I appreciate the fact this is another indication that we can accomplish our goals. And also, as Councilman Kavanaugh said, avoid some of those disruptions that sometimes are necessary, but I think that provide limited benefit versus the disruption that we've caused, and we can accomplish the same thing from a traffic and a safety standpoint by taking care of the intersection. So thanks for doing that.
We identified 3 categories, really. Of projects to extend the 2008 bond package. They are economic development, safety, and what we call redevelopment. We've proposed some specific projects. You see the dollar amounts, and again, those are, obviously there's flexibility in those numbers and the projects I'm about to talk to you about, but they do total about $22.8 million as shown. First and foremost, this economic development, this is the issue we talked about a couple weeks with council. I sensed a lot of excitement for this project, the streetscape project around Fiesta District. It's become a priority for council. So a few weeks ago, we talked about that streetscape project that might emphasize Southern, really, but include Alma School, Longmore, and Dobson as well. And what the project could include, and these are some of the elements in an estimate, really. Narrowing of Southern to create a shopper and pedestrian-friendly environment. Branding, including street name signs and monument signs. Street furniture, raised landscape median, dense landscaping adjacent to the street, and themed street lights I envision with, you know, banners, probably. In addition, it may be possible to leverage that this money against that $1 million that we had for the Fiesta Paseo. If we incorporate that somehow into the Southern improvements, perhaps that sits along the south side of Southern, there's a way for us to get those nodes in and the pathway and incorporate that into that whole environment. So we're trying to figure out a way to do that.
Yeah, so, Council, we're going to look at that. So that would be an option. Now, what it would do is shift that Paseo from whatever, kind of cutting through the middle, I guess, of the district. But the challenge with coming up with that matching funding, but maybe if we could shift it up so it parallels Southern along that with this project, then maybe the thinking is maybe we can use these funds to help leverage the dollars that are at the region to do that. So that's one thinking, and we'll obviously council probably want to weigh in on that, but that's just an option we're going to look at to see if they would it even be considered. So.
And as it relates to the Fiesta District and Southern, I'd like to thank all those people who have weighed in. This is not a Southern narrowing project. This is, as you said, a Fiesta economic development initiative. And I have no idea how it'll turn out. I'm anxious and excited to see the specific ideas that you have, which might include. Using some of the space that is now used for a third lane car for other things. What that is, I don't know. And we won't know until we get specific proposals. But what I think our objective is to create something that's unique, something that's special, and something that's more pedestrian friendly for that area. It's been real interesting that most of the complaints I've gotten on a potential, and it was thrown out narrowing, are from people who are upset because they drive right past Fiesta Mall in those areas. And, you know, I remember one letter I got, and I appreciate the comment, that said, every day I drive from East Mesa down Southern into Tempe and Phoenix. And if you narrow that, I'll never use that to drive that way again. And I'm saying thank you. You know, would love for you to get on the freeway and do that. Would love for you to stop in the district and shop and to patronize those businesses and everything. We're mindful of the traffic issues in the Fiesta District. We're not going to choke it off to put something pretty in there. And so I anticipate and look forward. I guess that's redundant, isn't it? To anticipate and look forward. I really do look forward to seeing what kind of specific ideas we have. That's something more than just a facelift. I'd be anxious to see something really spectacular. And the fact is that if we push the limit, we get it that it's gonna be probably controversial. I hope we go that far in creating something that is unique enough that it'll cause discussion. We need discussion and we need input, and we really do appreciate when people respond. But maybe I'd like them to maybe at least wait until we get some of these ideas specifically on the table.
And we'll do that outreach too, Mayor. Make sure.
Yeah, no, but I don't think I think this council was very clear in our discussion last week that we don't want just a normal road project. We view this as an essential economic area to our city. We view this as having real potential. I think we recognize the substantial private investment that's taken place already. The reluctance of other landowners and developers to continue on with that. And I think we're committed to creating something different, special, unique, however you want to define it, and we're willing to look into those possibilities. So I don't know if I'm misstating what we discussed last week. That's the message I got out of it. So, Councilmember Finter,
and just to build upon that, I don't know if the exact answer is constricting, but mid-block pedestrian pathways from the north, as Councilman mm-hmm. Richens. I don't know what that looks like yet. There was a lot of people jumped to conclusions. So, like the mayor, I think there's, I love the idea of maybe the Paseo going along. So it's, we're not in concrete yet, but there's some great ideas. So.
Yeah, and I, well, we, we have no idea what exactly it'll be. We just know where we want to head.
And I think the word I heard last time we talked about is that when you come into the Fiesta District, you know you've arrived at something different and distinctive. It's a destination definition. It's the branding that we talked about.
If Southern Enamel School looks like Tatum and Shea, I'm not interested. I don't think anyone is. And nothing against Tatum and Shea or Peoria and whatever that intersection is out there. You know, if it looks just like another mall, another area, then I don't think we're interested. We want it. We want people to think that they've arrived because we hope that that'll spur additional private investment and also support those investments that have already been made. You know, this is really a twofer. If this were just a dead area that hadn't seen any activity and didn't have vibrant college and hospital, medical area, it would be a different story. But, you know, we have hundreds of millions of dollars of private investment that have gone in there. And people have made a commitment, and I don't think it's improper for the city to look at ways that we can step up to complement that. So, okay.
Mayor, as a placeholder, we've identified about $10 million. Part of that cost is due to Southern Avenue is one of those streets that needs to be reconstructed. So with this project, we would propose, regardless of what we do to Southern, is to reconstruct that street between Alma School and Dobson. In addition to that, we could extend the branding theme on the north-south streets. But again, what I heard from council was emphasis on Southern Avenue. Safety was one of the other elements we wanted to address. You see a figure of $6.8 million. We reviewed all of our unfunded street improvements shown in the five-year CIP. We sat down with a team of folks and we rated them from 1 to 5, 1 being a very high priority. Based on crash history and operations, and we identified 6 high-priority street projects, which I'll show you on the next slide. Second safety element involved replacement of rusted streetlight poles. We've got a number of poles out there that are over 30 years old. These are primarily the direct burial poles that are getting rusted and, frankly, are falling over before we can get to them. We feel strongly we need to address those. If you look on this sheet here on slide 20, this is the 6 projects I referenced. It'd be my recommendation if we were doing a bond package this year, I would include all 6 of these. If we plan to use the savings and address some of these, I highlighted the first 2. Those are our very highest priorities. If you look at those, let me back up for a second. We typically look at 2 kinds of crashes as indicators of congestion and operational problems. That's rear-end crashes and left-turn crashes. If you look at Southern and Stapley, the number 1 priority, and think about it this way. We have, I believe, about 6,700 intersections in the city. And over this 2-year period, we had, I believe, 1,500 intersections had at least 1 crash. Southern and Stapley is number 1 in the whole city for intersection-related crashes. We've had 78 there in a 2-year period. It's also number 1 in left-turn crashes. We had 31 in a 2-year period. Number 6 in rear-end crashes. If you look to Southern Country Club, our number 2 priority, number 1 in rear-end crashes with 47, number 4 in all crashes with 67. Both of these intersections already have high traffic volumes, and if you look at the MAG projected counts for 2030, they're going to go up another 30% or so in the future. So we'd suggest that we consider these projects to be used or to use the savings on.
Dan, Councilmember Higgins has it.
Really quick, is that like northbound, southbound, or doesn't matter, it's just like total left-hand turn crashes from the intersection?
It's total. We do have a breakdown.
Does it matter?
Well, one of the good things about doing intersection projects, when you add capacity for any movement, it gives you the flexibility to reallocate time to the other direction as well. Okay. So if you're having throughout the day a problem north-south, you have more traffic, you can shift time in our timing plans to accommodate that. But so any improvements in capacity really can be taken advantage of.
Okay.
And Dan, let me help me out here. These projects that you've listed here, and certainly the 2 that you're recommending that we continue in the existing program, were part of the 4-year program that we had presented originally. And then, obviously, when we reduced that to a 2-year program, these are the projects that didn't make it into that 2-year program. So extending that is consistent with the plans we've always shown. These would be the next projects that would be addressed.
Thank you for pointing that out. I meant to do that. That's exactly right. These were intended to go in when we had just before a lot of the sitting council members came on board. We had developed a four-year package, and we whittled it down and got just our very highest priorities, and these fell out, frankly, but they were in that plan. They were high priorities then, and they continue to be. So if you look at the cost of these two projects, total cost almost $17 million, but if you look in that second column, you see the regional share. Our reimbursement is quite large, so for a net of about $5.1 million, we can add the capacity improvements, and we think really address our crash problems and some of the congestion we see down there. So we're leveraging that $5 million of city share to get almost $12 million in the regional.
Dan, what is it we're looking to do at Southern and Stapley and Southern and Country Club? Okay.
Southern and Country Club would provide an eastbound through lane, right turn lane, and a bus pullout, and a westbound through lane and a bus pullout. So you're getting additional capacity eastbound, westbound at Southern Country Club. Country Club's built out already, but we have high traffic volumes on there as well. So it's that same thing. We can reallocate the timing throughout the day to accommodate the flows.
So once again, when you get to the intersection, it's a pinch point.
Yes, sir.
Going east-west.
Yes, sir.
It's going to increase throughput.
Yep. And then on Southern and Stapley, what that's going to add, that intersection's smaller. It's our standard, basically, two lanes each direction and a single left turn lane. That'll add a through lane for each direction, all four, and do a left turn lanes all around, which will really address that left turn crash problem we have there, and it's number one on our list.
And how do we address that with the SRP right on the northwest corner, the pump station?
Mayor Smith and Vice Mayor Jones, when the shopping center on the northwest corner came in about the same time engineering was doing the alignment study for this, before it was pulled back to a two-year bond program, and engineering worked very diligently to avoid that well. And as part of the shopping center on the corner, they reoriented the area, if you will, that SRP has to pull their vehicles in and to service the work on the well without actually relocating the well. So that's already been addressed in the preliminary alignment work.
Well, in the preliminary alignment, but I'm seeing how we have an accident there every few days, and I drive it all the time. I'm trying to picture where we're going, because I know when they did the shopping center and they did realign the fencing, I still don't see enough room for another lane there. How are we going to do that?
The more of the widening will take place on the east side of Stapley. It won't be centered on the existing center line. It'll be offset to the east to avoid that. And then as you go south, come back to line up with the interchange. Right. Stapley just at the freeway interchange.
Councilmember Richens and then Councilmember Kagans.
Are there any considerations about Country Club and Southern that need to be made in light of considering the changes that we're thinking about in the Fiesta District? So if there's some capacity changes downstream or upstream, however you're looking at it, how is that going to affect?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, or Mayor, Councilman.
You can name us all.
Congratulations.
Looks right down the line. That was quick. We'll get there eventually.
Just call me Dave. Everybody. Just call me Dave. Everybody else does.
What was your question again?
The effect that narrowing Southern might have on Country Club and Southern and the work that we want to do there.
As I mentioned a couple weeks ago, we do expect if Southern is narrowed, there's going to be some impacts. There's going to be some diverted traffic. This would be a point where you might expect westbound traffic to start diverting, frankly. I don't know if they'll wait to Elma School. There's going to be some of that, and that's something we'll make it work the best we can. Whatever Southern ends up looking like, we'll make it work the best it can. But there's going to be there'll probably be some impacts.
But that wouldn't change the way you're thinking about constructing this intersection?
It wouldn't.
Okay.
Well, remember, Southern between headed westbound, you know, through the extension and all that area is right now. It's not going to change the way it is.
Correct.
Where it is right
so
now.
It, so it's the intersection capacity, and you know, it's a mile away from there.
Yeah.
So we don't expect that to influence what we recommend at that intersection.
And if I could add what the mayor said earlier about the intersections being the pinch points is very true. The two-lane or the four-lane, two lanes in each way for the mid-block between the major intersections can feed more traffic to the intersection because of the turning point. So,
because traffic is moving, and whether it moves in three lanes or two lanes, it's still moving. It's when you get to the intersection
exactly.
that all of a sudden everything stops
exactly.
and accumulates. So if we can get them through the intersections faster.
Exactly.
And that's what we found out, is that it didn't matter whether you had
exactly.
six lanes, eight lanes, or whatever. If you get to the intersection, you can't get through. You're still going to have that pinch point.
Exactly. So even if you
survive
just
on two lanes, if we have a good intersection.
Exactly right.
Just one more thing, too. One of the things I hear, well, there's two things I hear most in Northwest Mesa, just because of our antiquated street grid. It's traffic calming and street lights. And I see $1.7 million to continue to replace those. Is there any way to find money for new street lights and maybe some traffic calming in some of the older
okay.
gridded areas?
So, Mayor, Dave Richens.
Mayor and Dave.
It sounds like a morning show. The Mayor and Dave.
These are proposals we're coming up. We were trying to address the lights that we already currently have that are obviously, as you can tell from the next slide, let's just go ahead and go to the street lights, the rusting, and replacing those and keeping the inventory. We could certainly, if the council would like, the dollars to look at new street poles. I think the difference there, the concern, and maybe one of the reasons we weren't recommending it or we weren't looking at it necessarily, is what other additional power costs would be included with that. We'd have to consider that. I don't know it would be significant. We're really just trying to focus on issues as far as taking care of safety issues in this context. But certainly that's a discussion the council may want to have.
Yeah, that's why, because that's the perception, is that there's some real safety issues there with the lighting.
And that's another, and we're looking at, and that's fine. And that's something if the council wants to bring up and we can have that discussion, that's something we could address.
Could we, as we have that, also then get an update or discussion on things such as LED transition and those kind of
sure.
things? I like at some point in time, it might be a good time to, if we're talking about changing lighting
right.
things and improving writing, maybe, and I don't know where we are on that, but I know there's been a lot of progress.
And then your next point about traffic calming devices and other areas, I think when you see the next grouping, the discussion can be there is we're trying to use it for kind of economic development, infill, redevelopment projects. But if council wants to expand that to include some kind of traffic calming initiatives, they could. We were trying to be very careful about what we were suggesting as far as how to extend this program and try to stay pretty close to the program that's been in place since 2008 and been suggested in other programs, but certainly that's open to council. We were trying to be a little more restrictive in how we are looking at the opportunities to extend the program. But if council has some other ideas, we're open to that.
I'm not sure that traffic calming is in the original intent of that particular bond issue either. I wanted to ask the question, at least get it out there on the table, because it is a major consideration.
Okay. Councilmember Higgins?
This goes back to your intersection discussion. Sorry, but when you said you do rearrangement of timing, don't you have that capability now without widening and putting more lanes in, as far as you look at Country Club and people know that priority is north south and there's no backup? And
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, that's right, we do. However, when you add that additional capacity, you have that much more flexibility. So we can do that today in a given intersection. We can reallocate the time throughout the day. But when we add that second left turn lane, I look at it this way. Say we add a through lane, we have two through lanes now, you add a third one with the proper taper so it welcomes people in and it's well utilized. You're adding, when it turns green, it's 50% more capacity getting through the intersection.
Okay.
So
that's the timing thing you're talking about.
And same is true when we add a second left turn lane. Your green arrow's on for 10 seconds, 12 seconds. I'm moving two lanes of traffic every time the green arrow comes up if the demand is there.
So if I could add this example, basically we try to balance the backups and share the pain, so to speak. So if we had the two additional lanes on Southern, we could take less time on Southern to accommodate the same amount of traffic or a similar amount, and thus have more time available for the other direction.
Well, I'd also like to point out, if we deserved a standing ovation for the, like Councilmember Richens said, maybe a golf clap at least for the fact that we're leveraging these regional funds. Because I think the fact that, golf clap, did you do that, Kevin?
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's great.
No, but when you...
the 16th hole applause, though.
Okay.
Yeah, it should be.
That's right. That was a timely reference, wasn't it? When you're talking about leveraging $5.1 million into another $12 million, that is, when we talk about regional share, I think a very short explanation is in order. The regional share is based on the 2004 Prop 400, and one of the basic premises of Prop 400 was that there be a return of dollars that was paid by local jurisdictions, or basically Mesa taxpayers would get a return of that 0.5% sales tax that they're paying in. Mesa at the time decided to invest in these types of projects, and that's why a lot of our regional share, what's commonly referred to as regional equity, meaning getting back tax money that's been paid in, was earmarked for intersection projects. And so this is money that's sitting out there that our taxpayers have paid in, and the way we're going to get it back is to make our 30% investment. So I appreciate the fact that as we're looking at if there is any a capacity sitting here of unspent bond money, is that we can leverage it to the maximum point possible, which is, when you're spending $5.1 million so you get $12 million back in monies that our taxpayers have already paid in, that's a great project in my mind.
And Mayor, another reason these are two good ones, that regional share you see right there, we'll get that immediately after the projects are completed. So yeah, the timing is right. We don't have to wait to an out year.
So that, once again, that's money that Mesa taxpayers have paid in, but for our spending that money, that we won't get it back. So we're bringing back money that's sitting over there waiting for us to be spent. So thank you.
Okay. Let me just turn it over briefly to Alan just to discuss the redevelopment infill issues, and then we can wrap up here.
We've got a couple of examples of how that money could be used. In the situation here on the slide on what would be the southeast corner, there's a service station, and what we've seen in several locations is sometimes the service stations go, the businesses close, and then someone wants to come in and put a different kind of business on that corner. Well, under the current city code requirements, at this intersection, a new developer coming in, starting from scratch on this corner, would be responsible for part or all of the improvement costs to finish off that intersection, which for a small parcel could be burdensome and could actually make the project unfeasible. So the idea is...
It generally does make it. And that's why you have so many vacant corners. And remember, these... Because I think we're heading in a direction where it says, well, why should we subsidize developers? Remember, the city is setting the standard.
Right, correct.
For what this has to do. So in many ways, in a great economy, this is great because we're getting an add-on, because when development comes to that corner, we're requiring that developer to basically improve that corner to our standards.
Exactly.
And sometimes the corner exists, and we make them upgrade.
Exactly.
We usually make them upgrade, make them add a bus turn lane, make them improve street lights, and we'll pick up maybe a share of a portion of that with city share. But we make them upgrade that corner or develop that corner out. And, like you said, Alan, when we have a small project, what happens is it's not a matter of whether they share or not. They just don't build. And therefore
it sits there.
It sits there. Therefore, we have a vacant piece of land which is not economically active and is not a contributor, and we don't get a street that's upgraded anyway. So.
Exactly. And we would have to make some changes to the code. We're already thinking about how we could word that. And the next photo is an example of a similar situation where there's a building in the middle between two undeveloped parcels, and again, that finishing the road improvements across those parcels would be required of the developer whenever he came in to build something. So. Those are a couple of examples there. And obviously, if we set aside an amount of money for that, how much is going to be used is very similar to city share. It's going to vary from year to year. So if you don't have a lot of those one year, we could also consider projects like this that we're calling scallops, where they're larger parcels, well, sometimes larger parcels, but again, undeveloped parcels typically, not redeveloped parcels, where everything on each side has been improved, but there's a little bottleneck in between. And this first picture is an example on Guadalupe at Hawes Road, where east and west of this piece, Hawes is three lanes eastbound for quite some distance, and in this section it's only one lane because, again, this parcel is vacant.
This creates some...
Quick question on that. When that happens, the scalp mm-hmm. easement for that developer, does he have to... they have to pay that all up front, or do we have anything that says, hey, you know what, over the next 12 years you can pay... Because, you know, I can see where that's mm-hmm. a huge hit, but, mm-hmm. you know, if you stretch it out over 20 years like a mortgage.
We have a limitation. There is a scallop street law and state statute, and we can place a, I don't know if lien is the proper term, but a lien on that, but that expires after 10 years. So if there's not real pressure to develop here, the owner could just wait 10 years, and then that obligation is gone.
And that's by state law? It goes away?
I believe, isn't that correct?
I think there's a state law, but we also have a code provision that addresses this as well, but it's dictated by state
law. We can change the code, but we can't change state law, though.
But again, here what we're trying to address is ways to help, you know, the way that was this code that was put in place before worked for a period of time, but we're seeing more, it's more and more difficult, especially in the developed parts of our community, whether it's in the older parts of the community where these corners are becoming, they're wanting to redevelop, kind of go through that evolutionary cycle that we talk about sometimes in our discussions with zoning. But sometimes this burden, especially at the corners and the intersections, is significant. It adds a lot of cost to those projects. And so they're building, these are public facilities or street improvements or whatever. So that was just one suggestion as we've struggled with how to accommodate these in the, going forward. We have identified these we think would be opportunities where the city could, again, build public facilities, our streets, our bus shelters or bus pullovers, and we could use that, and hopefully that would help make some of these parcels, as working with a developer in conjunction with the developer, to either reuse or for some of these to not have any use at all, some new development.
Well, the other problem we have is that, you know, it is normal with a community like Mesa, where you have a new area, fast-growing area, and you have more mature areas, that it's, number one, more sexy to go out in the new areas, and number two, a lot of times it's frankly cheaper. Because as new buildings are built and they can start from scratch, they don't have some of the limitations that infill does.
Sure.
Well, that's great to have that new development. The problem is that if the mature areas don't redevelop, then we have a double burden as a city, because we're not getting economic activity from the mature area. We know that when areas have no economic activity, they become blighted. We just talked about one. When blighted areas exist, our public safety costs go up. Oh, and by the way, we just encouraged sprawl.
Yeah, we disincentivized the...
Which also then, now, we talked about Station 219. We just stretched our ability to provide services by basically encouraging development on the fringes versus redevelopment. So, you know, I think that the idea that somehow we're subsidizing or we're taking is a misnomer, because we need redevelopment in our more mature areas. We need infill development. And infill, sometimes what we looked out there, people look, they say Guadalupe and Haas. Well, yeah, that's infill now.
Yeah, it is now.
You know, Power McKellips, that's infill now. That didn't used to be infill, but it is infill now. And the fact is that as we both encourage sprawl, we place real burdens on the rest of the city by encouraging this development in areas when it should have gone into the infill. And we have a huge disincentive by requiring infill development. And infill development is already a more risky development. It takes a little bit more generally to, because you have other issues. You have existing utilities that you may have to move. It's just more risky. We've added another burden to that, so we've really disincentivized redevelopment, and we need to change that. We absolutely need to change that. We need to encourage development in mature areas and remove those barriers. I think our code is well-intended, and I think I understand how it got this way, but it assumes that basically every parcel of property and every place in the city is the same. And that's simply not the case. There is vast difference between what I would call cotton-filled development and infill development, redevelopment. And we need to adjust to that reality. Otherwise, we're going to continue to add to the burden of our taxpayers by encouraging development that we do not have the capacity to serve, and discouraging development in areas where we really need it. So I applaud the at least the efforts of to identify ways that we can change that.
And in this case, we might not do the full street improvement. We might just add two lanes of pavement and wait for the sidewalk landscaping and everything to be done with the development. This is another example that might be a little higher priority. two small parcels on Crisman right close to Skyline High School that haven't been developed, and we've got a real disconnect not only in the traffic, the lack of sidewalk right next to the high school.
So, Mayor, this is just a summary slide kind of capturing what we talked about, allocating up to $22.8 million. What this would do is it'd still leave about a $12 million available balance in bond authorization. So call attention to the last bullet point, the street reconstructions. I have a note there, future consideration. We've delayed maintenance in some circumstances on our asphalt in our expectation for the Prop 400 projects to move forward. So if there's some delay to that, at some point we would need to probably go in and reconstruct if we don't think we're going to be adding capacity in some location. So I just want to put that out there that there may be some need for that money or some consideration for that, any additional available funding. But at this point, I'd be happy to take any direction or comments or questions you might have.
So as I do the math here, we have a little over $34 million in savings, and your presentation proposed about $23 million in identified. So there's $15 million approximately, $14 million sitting there that we can decide what to do with. We may do nothing with it. I mean, once again, just because we have these savings doesn't mean we have to. We shouldn't rush to spend it and utilize all of it. There's a little bit hanging there that if we want, we'll just never issue the bonds.
Correct. And I think, Mayor, I think the figure's probably 12, according.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, you're
you
right. My math was wrong. 23 versus 35. You're right.
12.
My math was
about,
wrong. Yeah. And I am a CPA. Wait, I used to be. Legal disclaimer here. I am on inactive status, so I cannot.
Lawyer math.
Yeah, lawyer math. I have transferred into lawyer math. You're right. So I appreciate the fact that we're not rushing to just suck up all this stuff like, well, wow, we have all this money. That this is well thought out. You've identified good programs that we can certainly look at, review. But we've left something sitting there recognizing that just because we've saved doesn't mean we have to do anything. Councilmember Fender.
Great presentation. Let me do the what-if game. And for my fellow council members, keeping in mind District 2 has been the recipient of quite a few benefits of this so far, the leverage dollars, all the, you know, the 30% savings we're having. What if we didn't do anything with that $34 million? And I know this probably gets to finance. What if we didn't sell it? Or what if we addressed our ongoing old GO bond debt that we're paying $20-plus million dollars a year? I would love to have that kind of part of the discussion. I think I know what the answers are, and I've been able to get through it in my head as I usually don't try to answer or ask these questions unless I've looked at both sides of the debate, but that would kind of be my approach. What if?
Mayor, and just quickly, Mayor, Councilmember Fincher, this is an authorization. It's not actual dollars when we talk about the street bond, the capital improvement program. So we've been authorized to go sell bonds in the future. Okay, we don't sell the bonds until usually the year before. That's why we come in the spring for the projects going forward. So these are savings from the authorization, $110 million. So these funds aren't sold; they're not available funds. They're authorized for us to go sell. So they're not available to go draw down on any existing debt service today, any debt service payment, the 20, 25 million, whatever that we have each year, this is new dollars coming in. It's not existing dollars you can use to pay this off. Certainly that's the council's prerogative. With discussions with the council, we identified the projects, specifically the Fiesta District. It's been talked about several times in presentations about how we could fund that. The safety improvement projects, Southern Stapley, Southern Country Club, again, they were part of the four-year bond program authorization. The timing we felt was important to use the savings to extend the current program because not only are they high priority, but they leverage significant dollars from the region. So it's an opportunity for Mesa to get back more than 2-to-1 on dollars that it would spend. But at the end of the day, we could choose not to do any of these projects.
Chris, if we can get back to what I think Alex's question was.
And a little bit of devil's advocate, what I'm trying to do. So.
Well, a lot of devil advocate. That's okay. That's helpful. We like that. We like it when you're the devil. So. No, but let's say, put it in terms, and I think this is what Alex is asking. The voters authorized us to spend $100, okay, for 10 projects. We went out and did those 10 projects, and those 10 projects only cost us $90.
75.
Well, okay, we'll do it. $75, okay? So what we're saying is that we have this $25 that is unutilized authorization, okay? That's not money that's come in. We only sold $75 worth of bonds because that's all we needed to finish those 10 projects. So we got $25 here that we possibly could go out and sell bonds that to make up the full authorization that what the voter said. Now, when the voters authorized that $100, we said that $100 is going to cost you X dollars a year on your secondary property tax. All right. So as I understand Alex, what he's saying is that really we can either not have the voters spend that much. If we only spend the $75, it's not like we can go out and reduce debt because those dollars don't exist. It's simply unused authorization. But possibly we wouldn't raise the taxes that would take to spend the $100.
Correct.
Is that accurately defined?
Yes, so far so good, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is, well, listen, we understand that we could do that. What staff has said is we have a lot of vital projects that we would have loved to have included in the bond. We think that our merit implementation or building or whatever, and we can also take advantage of things such as the regional share, and therefore by leveraging that we actually expand the good deal that voters have, that the taxpayers have got, not only the savings, but we can now leverage some of these deals, and we can also accomplish some other things that might be high priority.
Right, and Mayor, to be for the voter.
And at the end of the day, let me finish one thing first. At the end of the day, we're still going to spend the same amount that the vote. It's going to cost the voters the same amount as we told them it would when they approved the $100.
And that's really what they approved. They approved $110 million for street projects.
For street projects.
We separately from the ballot language said, think for $110 million to do these projects. Well, but I think it's important because
it wasn't a list. It wasn't a list specifically.
We got authorization from the voters to spend $110 million on generic, street improvements. We provided a list and said, here's what we think we can do. But when you go to the ballot, the language specifically talks up to an amount of
I understand that, but I think we're getting technical here. And I think what voters understood is, yes, street projects. We gave them a list of things that we basically committed to spend on. We didn't say that was all-inclusive. I agree with you. But we did say, listen, we're going to do these projects. And we've done those projects. Mm-hmm. We've done those. We didn't change. We didn't say, here's a list of projects we're going to do. Oh, by the way, we're going to forget those. We're going to go do these other ones. We did the projects that we told the voters we were going to do when we
went to that ballot presentation. Language, we made it clear there was an opportunity to spend on other things, too.
Yeah, but that was just what we said that we were going to go do. That wasn't a legal requirement or anything. It was certainly a political requirement because that's what we promised the voters. And they would have very valid reasons to be ticked off at us if we said we're going to do this, and then when we got the money, we went and did something different. We have not done that. We have finished the projects or are in process of finishing the project that we represented to voters when they gave us the approval for this $100. And what we're saying is, listen, we saved money. Since you authorized us to spend money on street projects, there are still real needs in this community, and we'd like to take advantage of that. I get that. And so does that cover both sides of it,
and
Alex?
Just to clarify that one piece, we also said that we would take care of some old GO bond debt to be able to staff one of the fire stations. Mm-hmm. And so is there an opportunity to expand that so there's additional savings for future funding for whatever? I'm just wondering. We continue with what we told the voters. We were going to say, hey, it's going to cost you this much as we go through the sale, but instead of selling, we use that levy to retire or to
handle
old debt.
Retiring old debt won't do a whole lot because you're just spending
money for debt,
except for your general fund.
Yeah. Okay, what you're saying is that we keep the levy the same. What we told the taxpayers, here's what it's going to cost you to pay off this $100, but instead of doing capital projects, we use those money to fund operating.
Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there as possibilities in the whole.
Councilmember Summers has a comment. And welcome, by the way, Councilmember.
Thank you.
By the way, first thing he asked me is, can we repeat everything that's gone over this morning?
Yeah.
Start over.
He wants the video.
I will indeed watch the video, and I sure will have a meeting with Mr. Brady when this is done. My apologies. I was following up on a program I was involved with the Arizona Town Hall discussing problems with the state budget. Now to dive into the city budget. So if this has been touched on, I apologize, Mayor. But I think there's another issue that needs to be considered when we look at whether we move forward with new projects or stay where we are. And that is the fact that when we moved forward to the voters with these bonds for authorization, it was with full knowledge that a secondary property tax would be assessed to repay that bond debt, and the assumption was that they would pay a certain dollar amount for every $100 of assessed value on their homes. What was that rate? Does anybody know off the top of their head, Brian?
0.2977.
Okay, and that was based on what the assessments were at the time.
Yep.
Those assessments have gone down 15%, so in order to pay for the bond debt, we're going to have to raise that, readjust that rate in order to pay for that. I guess the question is, does the fact that we spent less money through savings, does that balance it out so that homeowners won't be paying any more per $100 assessed?
Yeah. Well, Mayor, be careful. You're talking two separate things.
Can we have a separate discussion? We need to come back and have that separate discussion. We're not ready to get into that because there's a whole lot
I don't think we can leave it because Councilman Summers raises an interesting question, but let's make one thing perfectly clear. We said we were going to sell $100 worth of bonds, and here's what it was going to cost you, mm-hmm. a household. Here's the check you were going to cut every year. Regardless of valuation, assessed valuation, that check number is going to be the same.
Yes.
It's not going to change. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter whether your home value goes up, down, whatever. If the amount was, and I can't remember, what was the amount on an average home? Let's say 47, whatever, $50, whatever.
Yeah, I think that's in the ballpark.
In the ballpark. It's still going to be $50.
Because of...
And it has nothing to do with valuation.
It's a formula.
It has nothing to do with assessed valuation. It has to do with the fact that you authorized this $100 million, and as it relates to the streets, $100 million of bonds, and it's going to cost this much to pay off those bonds. And you're going to pay $50 a home. Let's say it shouldn't change. Now, how we get there is a mathematical formula
between your value of your home and what the rate will have to be.
But the dollar amount is not going to change.
Even if value
changes, but the final number.
The final number is the same.
Yeah. Final number is the same because the amount of authorization didn't change.
The rate might go up, but the dollar amount.
If we have increased valuation, the rate goes down, but the dollar amount is still because we're paying off $100 million. Hopefully, if the assessed valuation goes up, it's because there's new construction.
Right.
And when there's growth, then that $100 million is spread over a larger base, and the dollar amount would go down.
So the average homeowner is told, roughly speaking, $40, $50. That number isn't going to change at all.
Mayor and Council, let's wait for that presentation.
Let's wait for that.
Yeah. Okay.
As a general concept,
if you're only going to meet the current obligations that we talked about and some that we mentioned that were not included in the previous presentations, that's when you have that discussion.
But to get back to Alex's Alex thing, and I don't know if we've talked about enough, Alex, we really have the authorization and the opportunity to sell $110 million in street right. bonds to fund both the projects that we have that we indicated that we would do, which we've done, and then if there's savings or whatever, we can use those for other projects as long as they're street projects.
That's very consistent. Now, the one thing I would say to answer the question too is, what if we decided not to spend the $34 million of this authorization? The staff would then be recommending to the council to consider then having a bond election for street improvements similar to a list like this.
And we have two other options, just so I can maybe restate what Alex said. The one option is we only spend $75, and therefore we only issue that number of bonds and we never issue the other $25 in this one. We may come back 2 years from now and say, wait, these are so critical, we're going to have to, you know, instead of the next bond issue being 100, it's going to be 125 because we still have to take care of these. Or what we could do is that we could tax as if we had issued 100 and redirect. Is that the point you're making?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Beautifully stated.
Then you forfeit the regional dollar.
But, and yeah, then you forfeit regional and you don't get the projects. That's right. Yeah. Okay. I didn't know if you wanted to. I just want to make sure I understood what you're saying.
No, that's excellent. And I just threw it out there as we consider what we're going to do. And
so no further discussion right now. We'll have a chance to discuss.
So as going forward from today, we've listed these projects out. We're looking for direction at some point.
Sorry.
Do we move forward? You know,
okay,
what
let's
we talk
see.
About.
Councilmember Richens, let's.
I hate to waste a perfectly good staff member that came up to talk, because I know Lenny loves to talk about streetlights.
Mayor and council members, I'll keep it simple. You mentioned streetlights. We did an analysis back in the 2008 bond election to see what it was, and I think we estimated around $2 million to cover a program annually to try to do streetlight enhancements in older areas. You also mentioned LEDs. We are in the process. You'll see something coming to council here soon. We got about $1 million Department of Energy grant for retrofitting lights for lower energy consumption. So we got about 2,400 lights, and they're kind of in your districts on the west side of town. We're replacing some of these existing lights that are out there and improving the lighting. So we'll see how that turns out, too. So we got a couple programs that will probably address those.
When you
issues.
Say $2 million to, okay, you have a streetlight standard,
sure.
and there are certain neighborhoods that don't meet that streetlight standard. When you say $2 million, did you say $2 million a year? It's not $2 million to bring the city up to standard.
No.
It's $2 million for the next 20 years.
The street standard is the...
Street standard. At the time that the subdivision was built, it met the standard at that time. To bring it to our current standards and for us to actually have something we could produce, you know, that's a pretty good sized project to put that many lights in. That's what we figured we could estimate we could get in. And it was over at that time we were looking at 2008. I think it was a four-year
total number contract. Of street lights we have in the city now?
37,000, 38,000.
Total number that we need to be up to standard.
You know, I'd have to get that number back with you. I can't remember what the number was.
I know you have it.
Yeah,
because
we did analysis
right.
2 years ago, and we took a spatially look at all these areas and found out which ones were didn't quite meet the standards. I don't have the number, but the reason the $2 million sticks in my head is that was something we could manage and actually put together as a project each year.
As an annual project. Okay. All right. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and thank you for keeping it simple. I don't know if that was intended directly at me, but if it was, thank you. Okay.
So, Mayor and Council, let me propose some ideas as far as direction. Can we get the concurrence, and I'm kind of skip around here on the list, the Council to proceed forward with us? I mean, we're trying to start moving forward with these dollars, if that's the direction the Council. Certainly the southern state, the intersection safety improvements, those projects are well identified. They're identified in the regional program. Can we get direction from council to move forward on those two projects now, meaning we would then move forward with the design and engineering and then be bringing those projects back for the construction for council? Or is there additional information you want on those? Economic development on Fiesta District, obviously, I think there's a lot of discussion on the concept, the design. We're going forward with full implementation, but we would begin the first phase of taking what we already have in the Fiesta District handbook, but further, I don't know what the word is, defining that layout as it relates specifically to the streets improvements, and maybe bring something back to council before as we're moving forward. But the idea is we would be moving forward with the Fiesta District streetscape program, and then. I mean, all of these is what we're looking for, is direction for council to tell us either today, or do you need follow-up conversations on streetlights or redevelopment, or would you like to give us, can we have that direction today on any one of these?
Well, first
items?
Of all, I think we gave you direction at the last study session on the Fiesta District.
Well, okay. But we hadn't identified
that. I know. I'm sort of jumping ahead so we don't have that discussion again. And,
okay.
And is there any opposition? Well, what's the sense of the council as far as at least moving to the next stage so we can get some specifics? Because, you know, there's no way we can decide whether we want to not spend or whatever till we get a little bit further.
We're going to have to go spend
invest a little money to see if that's if that's what we believe would be a wise use for those funds. Is Councilman Richens?
Quick question on the numbers. The budget for Southern Stapley and Southern Country Club of the total cost Is that the number just lifted from the 2008 bond, and is there a possibility that those are going to come in under, just as the other intersections have come in under? Is there going to be some cut?
Yeah, are those revised estimates, or are those the original estimates?
The old 2008 estimates. I mean, I think it's probably good to keep at the old estimates to keep, and I mean, I would rather.
Let's commit to old estimates and reap the benefits
sure,
of savings.
But I'm just trying to get a sense of.
These are the original estimates we proposed for the
So there's a potential for savings in
there. There is a potential.
If we can get these projects out, probably.
If we can get them out. And remember that there will be some right-of-way acquisition in there as well, in smaller areas, we hope. But that does take some time to do.
Well, let's start here. Is there any objection to moving ahead with these two regional-type projects?
Well, I would like to see on these two intersections, based on the savings that we've been seeing on the other projects, is what that number might be in here. So instead of it being $16 million, maybe it comes in at $14 million, just to kind of get a sense. Because that plays into the equation on the rest of the discussion.
In order to see that, we've got to move forward.
We'll have to go through some phase of design.
I think we should.
Then we'll come back and when we get to it.
We're not approving contracts or bids or anything right here.
Right. Yeah.
We're just giving direction for staff to move forward.
We get an engineer's estimate on this or some phase, and we can come back.
What I'd like to do is get an alignment set, and so that we actually know what kind of right-of-way takes we have out there.
Okay.
So we would have to go through some initial engineering to do
so
that.
So is that okay that staff move forward with that? I see nods all around.
Yeah.
Okay. So those two projects, go ahead and move ahead with what you need to be able to come back and give us the kind of updated information and see what kind of potential savings we have there. Fiesta District, is it okay to have the staff move forward with down the road with some further design or concept work that they can bring back to us so we can have some more detailed information? Is that okay with everyone there? Okay, I see nods all around. So go ahead and move ahead with
conceptual
on the
designs?
Yeah.
Alternative conceptual
designs.
We'll get some detail. Streetlights.
And that will include the Paseo money, too.
Can you do that together?
The concept.
We will look for stealth connections.
Okay. Streetlights. Move ahead with that type of deal.
The replacement?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that one now is order. Just do it. I mean,
right.
It's just,
yeah.
We're not, there's yeah. not a lot we're of
we're
gonna, like
we're gonna spend
plans.
That money. We're either gonna pull that money out of GO funds.
Yeah.
Basically, the idea is it's general fund or bond.
Yep. That's how it works.
Because you got a rusted streetlight, it's
the liability we need to get out there and take care of.
What life expectancy of a new streetlight?
Well, I think you're putting them on pedestals now, right? Yes. To avoid the rusting?
Councilor Richens, we were using foundations with bolted. The old style was direct burial, which we.
So it just sucked out. It basically leached up part of the water.
We got some direct burials that are 50 plus years old, too. So it just really depends on where they are. But the new poles, somebody asked, I don't have a great life expectancy, but I think it's greater than 50 years, and we'll all be gone.
So using dead pipe.
Oh, yeah.
Using dead pipe.
Lenny has no problem sticking this on the next generation. Thank you, Lenny.
Yeah, no, Dave, that's the life
that's
of
Lenny
the,
Hume, H-U-L-M-E.
Hey, Lenny, that's keeping it. It's pretty simple. Yep. Thank you.
The point I wanted to make sure people understood was that this would be an appropriate item to debt finance because debt
it'll extend
many years.
20 years the useful life.
And if we don't, this is a real blessing for us because if we don't use it for this, we're going to have to take it out of general funds because if something starts to fall down, we have to replace it.
Is that the total number of failing streetlights in your opinion? 500.
We're just addressing 500 out of 7,500 that eventually would need to be replaced. Now they're not all falling over now. I don't want.
But over the next couple of years, these are the ones that need to be replaced.
We're getting over 100 a year. We find need to be replaced, so we'll be pretty aggressive in our replacement.
So it's
which is why another reason, and I hate to bring up LED again, but we also have lights that come to the end of their lives. And it would be great as they go through the normal life, and we're replacing them anyway. If we have an alternative that can either save energy or do whatever, that would be the time to do it. And it'll take many years to get through the whole inventory, but at least we started and get a program going.
Right.
Just to let you feel comfortable.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
And with that, are we doing better on the testing as far as the heat-related problems with LED lights? Where are we at on that?
That's correct. In fact, that's why I say we're coming to council. Vice Mayor, with the contract, with the new set of LED lights meet all our standards, or meets the standards that we set out, and they have resolved many of the issues with the heat-related issues with LEDs, getting better ventilation through the process, and also they're more efficient than they were when they first came out.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly the technology is changing in LED. I mean, just in the last couple of years, I been incredible. Yeah.
I mean, is that a program that we can retrofit, or do you need a whole the lamp itself can retrofit? The pole stays the same. Is that?
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, there is products out there that you can retrofit existing lamps by certain manufacturers. Ours is actually a complete take off the old fixture and put a new fixture in.
The fixture, but not the pole.
Not the pole.
Not the pole.
Yeah, yeah, that's basically a retro that you're talking about.
And if we come to a pole that meets the criteria for it, you know, we'll needs to be replaced, well, the fixture can be taken off, put on a new pole. So,
okay. All right.
One more.
One more on the list.
Yeah, the redevelopment.
Now, what we would do, maybe what we would propose here is we're not just going to go do these now, but we would identify if there's an opportunity for someone who's coming in to do development, or some of these scallops do create some real difficult pinch points.
I'd like to get some more. I personally like to get some more specific information, because that's the one that I get the need. It's not as critical
to
me.
The timing is not as urgent, but we wanted to at least identify an opportunity. Maybe.
I got you.
Mayor, on that point, could we look at the things that would affect public safety? Example, the fact that there's not a sidewalk in front of Skyline High School. You know, those areas in the city where we see that, and it is a public safety issue. And
why don't we do this? Why don't we have staff go out and identify and maybe prioritize some of the scallop and the redevelopment that you would, you know, for example, that's a safety concern. I know for a long time in your neighborhood there on Val Vista, they had the scallop road, and it was a huge safety because all of a sudden you lost a lane. And there was I can't remember which picture it was. Guadalupe
and
Haas.
And that can be a challenge.
That's so big.
Well, this Southern and Chrisman.
Southern and Chrisman was the one.
Well, let's go back and come with a list. And council members, it's also you've probably come across, especially the intersection ones where we've had difficulty redevelopment through, was a gas station out once.
Yeah, and you got one corner that's not developed that doesn't have a sidewalk or anything. Those are the kind of things I think that I'd be interested in.
We'll work on the list and read that back.
They only last 10 years. So I'll give Councilmember Summers an update on that.
Okay.
And then as these come back, then I think we'll need to address what Alex brought up. And Alex, valid question that we can address at that time. Is this a project, or do we want to take another option? Does that sound all right, Alex? Okay. All righty. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next item on the agenda is here reports on meetings and our conferences attended. And your Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you. Just briefly, yesterday I participated as a judge at Fiesta Mall in the 4th annual Canstruction event. This is a Phoenix design build competition which uses cans of food and food packages to create a variety of different designs to combat hunger. Canstruction is a charity committed to ending hunger using one can as a catalyst for change. And very creative designs at Fiesta Mall that will be on display in the center court area until the 27th. And we really appreciate all the companies and entities who came together to build these designs, including the students at East Valley Academy here that worked very hard with some other professionals in doing the designs. They started last Friday night, and some worked till 4 in the morning to get the designs done. They're very creative, and we thank Fiesta Mall for being a prime sponsor. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, I apologize for being late today. I was involved with the Arizona Town Hall recently in a study of state finances, the structure of government, and how the city raises revenue and spends it. As was heard in this presentation today, you can understand that I think it demonstrates why it's so important for members of this council to be involved on state and national committees. Being involved in that process has allowed me to provide input to the state about the fiscal challenges not only that the city has with its own struggles, but how the state's problems negatively impact cities. And from today's presentation, you saw how a lot of our issues are really out of our control because of somebody else's decisions. So it's very important that we continue to be involved in that, and this council and you, Mayor, have been involved in those types of activities. So that's where I was today, doing a community outreach program.
Thank you. Anything else? On Tuesday, I had a dual opportunity to interface with our neighboring cities. First of all, Mayor Boyd Dunn of Chandler invited me over for a 45-minute interview on his cable TV program that he has in the city of Chandler. And then that evening, I attended Mayor John Lewis of the town of Gilbert's State of the Town presentation. And I just want to say that the mayors, especially in the East Valley, we work very closely together on common issues and on just keeping lines of communication open. We have a really good set of mayors, especially in the Far East Valley, Chandler, Gilbert, Tempe, Queen Creek. We talk a lot, we share notes, and interact quite a bit. So to continue on with what Councilmember Summers was saying, I really appreciate their involvement with regional issues. For my state of this city, Breakfast with the Mayor, we had several mayors come to that, and I've gone to two or three, and it's really important to keep that line of communication open, because, really, city lines don't exist in a lot of things we do, and it's important to recognize that we have to come up with solutions that benefit all the cities, because we're in it together. And so I'm very fortunate, and we're very fortunate to have mayors who understand that in our neighboring cities. So. Okay, Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. We're getting back to our very busy time in Mesa, Arizona. It's a lot of great things going on. We're really excited this evening. The council has been invited to the Play Ball VIP reception starting at 5:30. That's tonight at the Arizona Museum for Youth. Really a lot of hard work's going on to that with the Amy staff and the Historical Society and Lisa Anderson, who now works for the city. So we're really excited to have that downtown Mesa. It will be open to the public beginning on Friday, the 26th, and it'll go all the way through November 7th. So we want to make sure everybody's aware of that and comes down to see that great exhibit. Also, this Saturday's going to be very busy.
Chris, there's some conflicting. The reception starts at 5:30. What time is the actual event? Is it at 6:30?
6:30 or so.
Oh. Okay, so the reception starts at 5:30, but then there's an actual
program.
The mayor speaks at 6:30. So,
well, right. Actually, don't come to see that. But former Governor Rose Mofford, who you do want to come and see, she's participating in it.
Okay,
and she's
6:30 is the program.
She's the guest of honor, and that's at 6:30.
The reception starts at 5:30.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Then this Saturday's top to bottoms for districts 1, 3, and 5. The kickoff is at Riverview Toyota, and just the council knows, the executive staff will be painting another bridge in Mesa at Greenfield and University. So we have a group that will, and we're wearing our green shirts. And then we have a council meeting on Monday, March 1st, and then also council next Thursday. Yeah, it's already next Thursday. March 4th is the opening game at spring training. And the council will be invited. You'll be getting your invitation to come to that opening game on March 4th. So thank you very much.
Okay. Ms. Crocker, are there any requests to speak from the public?
No, Mayor.
All right. Thank you so very much for this morning. This has went a lot longer than we normally do, but it was very, very beneficial and useful. So thanks a lot. We have a motion to move into executive session from the Vice Mayor, a second from Councilmember Summers.
Right now.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We will now move into executive session.